What's going on, everybody? I'm Johnny Brook. Welcome back to episode 23 of the Crafted Podcast. Podcast all about making stuff by hand, woodworking, electronics, metalworking, leather, and more. We publish new episodes every week on Wednesdays, so check that out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere podcasts are available. Also, if you want to learn more about the show, check out our website. It's craftedpodcast.com. We also live stream there every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time, so if you want to catch us live, check out the website or download our app, the Crafted Podcast app, in either the iOS or Android store. So let me go ahead and introduce my co-hosts as always. We've got James Wright from Wood by Wright. What's going on, James?
Not that much. Thank you.
And Zach Herberholz from Zates Fabrications. What's going on, Zach?
How's it going, guys?
Good, good. So, yeah, been crazy couple days, so excited to kind of dig in. We got a couple people in the live chat already, so that's great. Who wants to kick us off on what we've been working on?
A dresser.
James does.
Yeah, you're killing it, man. you're in the home stretch.
Yes, I finally got out the next video in the series, which is the hardest one, which is the drawers. So the drawers are all in, sliding, semi-functional. I have a lot of little cleanup to do on it, cleaning up the tenons, getting the fit just right, a lot of those little detail things, and to the hardware. And then, of course, I have to make the top, which I haven't quite decided what I want to do, but that should be kind of fun. And I'm thinking carving. I'm thinking some inlay. I don't know. Maybe I'll just leave it flat, but
nice, man. Yeah, that
and
thing.
Then, I'm working on router planes.
Nice. Dude, by the way, that video you posted, I don't know if you posted it on Instagram too, but I saw it on Facebook where you're trying to move the dresser. You're making all those grunts and stuff. I had my volume up on my computer, and like I just realized if somebody was hearing this from another room, this video would sound very wrong. So that was kind of a funny thought. But yeah, man, that thing is a beast. Like, I hope you never move, because that is going to be ridiculous.
I will be passing it down and the hernias to all of my kids.
Seriously, man, that is... I mean, and you got to get it upstairs, I guess, right? Because you have a basement shop.
Yep, in the basement. Whew. So it's it is total, in the actual process, 150 board feet that have been consumed. Wow. So there's probably about 100 board feet in there of white oak.
That's crazy. Jeez. I mean, that is a Rubeau. I mean, that's what Benchcrafted says. Yeah, that's what Benchcrafted recommends to get for the split top Rubeau. So that's that's kind of insane. Man, that's nuts. That's nuts. Zach, what about you, man? What you been working on?
Well, I finally, more or less, I'm finished up with that prototype chair, finally. Nice. Going to be sending that to the upholsterer when I get back from Atlanta. And then I'll make three more of them.
Nice.
I'm really happy with the way those are turning out. I did walnut for the armrests in the back. And it came out really
both
nice.
Right,
so,
arms.
Yeah. What's that?
Yeah, two right arms. Yeah. Yeah, man, that thing is looking awesome. So is it going to have a back cushion or no, just a butt cushion?
Yeah, there's going to be a back cushion on there, okay. But you can still see the walnut from the back of chair when you're standing behind it. So,
cool.
I'm probably just going to tack the armrests in place until I figure out the upholstery. And then once I get it back and everything is solid, then I'll weld everything back and actually put a finish on the wood and the metal. So
nice.
That's good. And then, I still those big doors that I was working on forever, I guess those are finally installed in the new house. So I don't know. He's going to send me some pictures of those. He's up in Daytona. So if the pictures are good enough, I'll probably edit the video and post that. That's going to be a big video. If not, I might drive up there just to get some final pictures for the video. But he also wants me to do a desk for him. That's going to be a really, really nice, expensive desk. So that's on my radar too. I have more work booked out than I can keep up with. It's crazy.
That's awesome, man. That's a good problem to have. Those chairs are looking awesome. So I guess the prototype then, I mean, it's finalized. That is exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the four.
Cool.
I kind of want to make one for myself, because I think they're going to be super cool. Like I'm hoping it'll get me on like the radar of like furniture design people, because Yeah, that's a big thing, and I enjoy it. So I'd like to kind of get more into that aspect, because I'm just really eating up the design process. It's just so much fun to spend a lot of time, you know, designing things and figuring the ergonomics out and the styling. And it's just, I don't know, I have a lot of fun doing that. And then when you, it's interesting, because when you do that in SketchUp and stuff, I mean, you can build it, but it always looks so much better in person. It's crazy. And I tell people that all the time. Like, this looks cool in SketchUp, but in person, it's going to be 2-3 times cooler. It just always is. It's really weird. And you can get pretty accurate with SketchUp, but it just, there's something that doesn't.
Dude. Yeah.
And for me, a lot of the design process, I mean, I feel like probably 60 to 70% of it in SketchUp, that's getting the measurements and getting usually kind of the ergonomical stuff and like figuring out the height and the kind of the base measurements. But a lot of the creative process for me happens when I'm building, when I'm doing that meaningless work that, you know, I have a lot of people that tell me all the time, like, you need to hire somebody to like do your sanding and to do this and to do that. And I don't want to, because that's usually where my ideas come, you know, when I'm doing that mundane stuff. If I'm, you know, sanding something with hand sanding something, that's when I'll get the idea to be like, oh, maybe I can, you know, bend this instead of doing this. And it just, there's a certain evolution that comes with the hands-on element that you just can't predict in SketchUp. So, I don't know how I got on this tangent, but that's kind of my thing. So,
no, definitely.
It's a lot of fun. So the chairs are cool. My inbox is just getting full of requests for work and stuff, which is great. I never would have thought a year ago that I would be doing this for a living, let alone be over my head in potential work. Like, I don't even know how I'm going to make everybody happy.
You do hire an assistant, man.
Dude,
if I could hire somebody to sand for me, I would do that in a heartbeat. I don't think I've ever had a creative moment while sanding. I think there are other processes that I'd totally agree with you on, but man, once it gets, especially like, okay, everything's to 80 grit, then you got to work all the way up through the rest of the grits and do all that stupid stuff that just takes forever and is mind-numbingly boring. That is tiresome. So,
sandpaper.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
try using a hand plane on a rounded over edge with a round over bit, man. I don't think that.
Well,
work.
For a spoke shave is for.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you don't.
Well, I mean, or molding whatever hand. Whatever the specific medium is. I don't know. It's just, I think there's something cool to. I really enjoy the whole process. I mean, some more than others, but you know, I look forward to every aspect of it. There's really, that's, I don't know if I'm rare, but I like the design phase. I like the plopping down the materials and dimensioning them. I like putting it together. I like finishing. I like every part of the process. There's nothing to where I'm like, I hate this. And it's incredible.
I mean, sanding is that part for me, lucky. Man. I loathe
What's
it.
That?
Sanding is that for me. I loathe it every single time. I don't know. It's just one of those things that just frustrates the living crap out of me. I just, I don't know. I want it to be done, you know, because then like applying that first coat of finish is the greatest feeling ever, because that's when everything pops and you also know like, okay, I can't do anything else to this piece now. You know what I mean? Like, this is staying how it's staying, you know? Like, that's one of the best things about putting on that first coat of finish. It's like, I can't mess around with this any longer. So, sanding is my least favorite.
The funny thing, I talk about how little I sand, but my favorite tool of the week is a type of sander, if you look down at the bottom of the list.
Man. Well, a good sander. I mean, good sander will make a huge difference in your life.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
There is kind of a meditative, like, it's kind of a Zen time for me sometimes. I put on like some good music and just.
I don't know if it's because a lot of the projects I've done lately have a lot of ingrain, and maybe that's what's making me particularly hate sanding. Like these two coffee tables. You know, they're 3 3/4 of an inch thick, 29 inches wide. all ingrained hard maple on two ends, and there are two tops. So you can imagine.
Ingrained's the worst.
Yeah. You can imagine how much sanding that was. Like, it took forever. So, yeah. And then I built that.
Don't
crazy,
you have a low angle jack?
I do. And I got it to, you know, a certain state with that, but I'm still not really good enough at that to. I'm hoping you'll teach me your ways this weekend, because I basically like hacked away at it with the low angle and got it decent, but you know, never like perfect. And I don't know what, like, of the three bevel angle blades, I don't know which one you'd recommend for that.
Lowest.
Like the lowest. Not okay. Interesting.
Yeah. For end grain, you want it like a 20.
Oh, really? Yeah. For some reason, I was thinking like
slices
highest.
Through it.
Because
the highest is for your figured woods or your curls or going against the grain.
Well, that could explain it. I had the 38 degree in there, so that probably wasn't helping matters.
Yep.
But I guess that leads into what I've been working on, and that is these pair of maple and steel coffee tables. They have been a ridiculous amount of work. It looked very simple. It's a design that my mom found at Room and Board, and she just wanted me to basically make a set for her based on that design. And so I thought, yeah, that'll be easy enough. It's just basically a butcher block, essentially like a long grain cutting board top with a steel base, and there's two of them, and they're kind of designed to sit next to each other and make one kind of longer, larger coffee table. And anyway, it has been an enormous amount of work. I mean, just the sheer size of those maple tops and their weight makes it so difficult just, you know, trying to flip them over to round over the edges and sand on all sides and all that kind of stuff, just getting them flat to begin with. I mean, luckily I have a drum sander, but it's still so heavy that I had to, like, lift it on the infeed and lift it on the outfeed, because even with the support tables, like, there was no way they were supporting 85-pound chunk of wood, you know. So it's been a beast. My lower back is hurting a little bit, and then spent all day today building the steel bases, and I'm quite rusty at welding, so you know, I had to get all that stuff out and literally dust it off and you know, get that all going. But it came together somehow. I mean, I'm really not sure how it all happened, but it is tomorrow morning will be done, so I'm happy that it's come together, and I think it's going to look really, really sweet, and should be a nice project. So you guys will actually get to see it tomorrow at my parents' house in Atlanta. So
looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'll be cool. So yeah, so that project video, anybody listening on iTunes, will be the one that came out yesterday for you guys. So definitely check that out on my YouTube channel. But yeah, I tried for the first time today that Sculpt Nouveau, which was kind of interesting. I know, Zach, you've used that before quite a bit, and I've seen Jimmy DiResta use it quite a bit. So,
Jimmy DiResta uses it?
I thought yeah. I saw him use it.
Something like it.
Yeah.
I think he uses something else.
I feel like I remember that seeing that Black Magic
label. I think he uses like the Birchwood Cassie stuff, I think. At least I haven't watched his videos recently, but he used to use something.
Isn't that made by them, though? Yeah. That's made by Sculpt Nouveau, right?
I don't think so, but I think Sculpt Nouveau sells it as well.
Well, either way, it's in case you guys don't know, it's a metal patina. And so basically you spray it on and it reacts with the metal and creates pretty much instantaneous color. But it's cool because it's not like a paint where it's all one plain color and you're covering up the steel. This actually, you know, it has kind of a texture to it. It has a really cool look. So I'm excited with how it's come out. It's interesting too, because the welds themselves, you know, the ones that I didn't grind down, like on the inside corners, they don't really take it as well, so you kind of get an interesting contrast there. So
you have to, if you hit those welds with a wire brush first, it'll take it just there, like the rest surrounding metal. Because when you weld it, you have your argon and stuff, and it forms, the heat forms some sort of like a protective coating for oxidization. But if you hit it with a wire brush, it takes that off, and then it'll.
Like a wire wheel, or just like a regular old brush?
I just use like a little wire hand brush.
Interesting.
It's like a little welding brush.
Good to know. Well, next time. But anyway, it still looks cool, and I'm pretty happy with the way it turned out. And then I just used their clear coat, their spray lacquer, whatever it's called. I can't remember, like Armor Guard or something like that. But it's looking pretty sweet. So I think I haven't welded in a long time. So it was kind of, I don't know. Welding is like equal parts awesome and frustrating to me because I'm so spoiled by my woodworking side. You know, everything's like perfectly set up and ready to go at all times. And with welding, like I'm literally dragging stuff out in my driveway. And of course, it started raining like halfway through the day. So I had to pull everything back in really quickly. And I don't know. I need to set up my metal side of the shop better so I can use this more. Like my metal cutting saw is on my floor, so I'm like doing deep squats, you know, for an hour to cut up all these pieces, and yeah, it's not ideal at all. So I need to trick out the metal side for sure.
I'll help out this weekend, hopefully.
yeah. If you got extra time, I've got that welding table kit sitting there, so we can
welding table kit.
Yeah, from this Certifab company. It's like a it's awesome, man. It's like a laser cut welding table top with like perfect, you know, it's like a Rubo style holes.
How thick is the top on it?
I can't remember. Was it like 5/16 or something? Let me see if I can.
I'm looking forward to being in this futuristic shop you've got going on.
Is it stainless or is it just mild steel?
I think it's just mild. I'll pull up the webpage. Yeah, it's going to be quite a different experience from your shop, James. It's it's just a little bit bigger, and it's kind of cool though, because like I'm pretty sure three of us can be working simultaneously and like be comfortable and not running into each other. So
that's crazy. I'm trying to imagine if we did this in my shop.
Yeah,
how terrible it would be.
James's shop? I mean, like,
I've had three people at least in my shop before.
At least your shop is safe, James.
Yeah,
yes.
Mine, you have to like step over Romex that's like just wired directly to the breaker panel. Step over it. Yeah, it'd be terrifying. There's like extension cords everywhere, and
that's hilarious.
Bad.
So yeah, it's a, let's see, I just pulled up the specs on the table. So it's Certiflat, that's the company, not Certifab. So Certiflat, weldtables.com if you guys want to go check it out. It's a 3-foot by 4-foot welding table with legs and locking swivel casters, 3/16 inch thick hot rolled steel pickled and oiled top. So yeah.
So you won't want to use an oxyacetylene torch on it.
No, I don't have one of those, so that shouldn't be a problem. But right. Yeah, it's sweet, man. It's got, you know, the whole grid of holes, so that's
yeah, that would be nice to have. Like
I'm trying to get some of those Bessie clamps, you know, that work with the welding tabletops, because that's the worst. That is what I hate the most about welding, is not having a table that lets you clamp in the center, you know, because with welding you want to keep it clamped while it cools, or else it'll warp. And you know, not having clamping,
the welding table isn't thick enough to use a hold fast.
Yeah, yeah. So these have 16 millimeter holes on 2-inch centers. So you know, it's basically spaced perfectly. So I'm excited to have it built. I just haven't gotten around to it yet because I've had a lot of other projects going. But
yeah, I want to get. The one I have right now, it's maybe 1/4 inch, but it's stainless, which is so nice for a welding table because it's just bare metal. Everything is a fantastic conductor, and I don't have to worry about rust. And I can tell, like when I go to clean it off, I can tell where there's metal deposits because it sparks and stainless doesn't. So it's just really cool. But I wish it were thicker. Like ideally I'd have like a, honestly, like a 3-foot by 6-7 foot long table of probably 1/2 inch mild steel.
Yeah,
just because half that size of stainless is not
that'd be pretty
feasible.
Pricey.
Even the mild steel would be expensive, but you know, if you tack stuff to the table to hold it in place, which you can do, or using an oxyacetylene torch on stuff, you really, that extra thick top prevents it from welding, because I mean, if you're going to have a welding table, you want that thing to be dead flat. Yeah. I mean, if you have a giant chunk of steel taking up space in your shop and it's not dead flat, that's a complete waste of space.
Well, that's the whole design of this system, is that it has basically some, I guess you'd call them aprons, but they're running underneath and essentially a grid. And so the whole tabletop and these grid pieces are laser cut, so they fit together in these little slots. And the aprons have these little tabs on them. And so it basically fits together. You weld it up, like, easy breezy because it all fits together. And then the table is, like, pretty much dead flat, guaranteed. So that's kind of the whole point of it. So, it's a cool welding table for sure. So anyway, let's, I guess, move into the show topic. This is an interesting one. I think we'll have some.
No, it's not. It's terrible.
I like it. I actually.
You're scraping the bottom.
I'm kidding. Yeah. You guys should just stop listening right now. It's that bad.
So the topic is, what is our purpose in making? So basically, why do we make stuff and that kind of thing? So who wants to start us off?
For me, it started out as something like I've learned a lot about myself in the past couple of years, and especially moving. I feel like when you move cities, you really learn a lot about yourself and what you like and what you don't like. And I can't have idle hands. Like I didn't realize it. I just, like, especially moving to Florida, like, I'm not a sunshine and beach person. Like, I can't go. The worst thing for me, like, I can't think of a worse day than going to the beach and laying in the sun. Like, I would be absolutely, I'm miserable doing that. That is not for me. Like, I would much rather go hiking. I'd go hiking or, like,
yeah, give me the woods, give me the mountains, give me the snow.
Like, do something that's like, improve it, that's bettering me as a human being. And I'm not trying, I hope that doesn't come off as pretentious. It's just the way I am. Like, I feel like if I have a couple of hours, I want to develop something. I want to, like, level up my something. You know, I want to, like, learn something. I want to do something that's physically active. I want to develop a skill. I want to, you know, do something that for me is productive. And I'm not saying that, like, relaxing isn't important, but it's just not. I do it differently. I do it sanding, you know. Like, that's my beach time. Is that's my zen moment, is if I'm, you know, just doing something like that. But the purpose for me, I guess it started out as, you know, building stuff was one of those things for me. It was one of those, what am I going to do? I want to do something that's productive and that, you know, developing a skill. So I started, you know, putting stuff together and having fun with that. And then I thought, wow, this is great. Maybe I could actually make a little bit of money doing this. So I made some knickknacks and started selling them. And it just kind of progressively got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden it was feasible as, you know, that was about the time where I started watching YouTube and got hooked on Jimmy DiResta. And I'm like, holy crap, like, there's people. I didn't even know that there was people doing this for a living. I didn't even think it was a real thing. Like, if you would have told me fabricating or woodworking, I would think, oh, you're going to work for a molding company or you're going to work at a steel shop. Like, that's what I would have thought, that, you know, that those were the opportunities that were out there. I had no idea that there was people like Jimmy DiResta out there that are, you know, doing custom unique work, and they're working for themselves, and they're, you know, and that really appealed to me. And I went off the deep end and I'm like, wow, this is a real tangible possibility. And that's when I really started looking into it as, you know, this is my favorite. This is what I want to do when I'm at work all day. This is what I'm thinking about doing. Like, I'm daydreaming about building stuff.
Yeah.
How can I do that instead of this? And it just sort of started, you know, it's kind of an inverse relationship between my day job and my hobby. And how can I, you know, it starts out, I'm 100% day job. How can I start diminishing my day job and expanding my hobby and turning that into my day job? And it, you know, I talk to a lot of people that aren't happy doing what they do. And for some reason, there's this idea that you just have to cannonball, that you just have to say, no, I'm going to save up a bunch of money and I'm going to jump in. And this is, you know, and then they don't do it because it's the most intimidating thing in the world. Yeah. And that's not the way to think about it. I mean, test the water a bit, but you really have to be committed to develop that skill and to put that time into it and to test the water a bit and say, okay, well, you know what? If I hit these craft shows, at least I know I can make a couple hundred bucks a month. That's a start.
That's the fantastic thing about making is that there are so many ways of jumping in. It's so many different medias, so many different things that take different amounts of time. It's just so flexible.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I mean, but that's the thing. I mean, when I find myself having this conversation with a lot of my friends and people that I meet along the way, they're like, how do you do that? Like, I want to do that. And it's the same thing. It's, you know, and I hear them talking and they say, well, you know what, I plan on putting some money aside and, you know, getting some tools and then jumping into it. And it's like, you don't, at least for me, I didn't jump into it.
No.
I eased into it very softly. Yep. You know, I had 2 days a week and a wife to, you know, to keep happy and get stuff done. And it wasn't fast. I mean, nothing happened fast, but I was determined and I thought, well, okay, this week I'm going to learn how to make boxes. How many ways can I make boxes? And those are all skills that you can build on and you can sell that stuff, you know? Yeah. So that's just kind of how it evolved for me. And then I got to the point to where it was feasible where I'm like, well, I'm making enough money to where I can go down to part-time. And then once I got that established, then it got to the point where I'm like, okay, my day job is holding me back. Like I know I was maxed out, you know, at the part-time thing. I'm thinking, wow, I could do a lot more building and stuff if I weren't working, you know, 25 hours a week at my other job. So the point came to where I turned that corner and started doing this full time. And it's been the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, I mean, to my personal life, it's in my happiness. It's incredible. So the purpose is it's multi, you know, it's not just one thing. It's not to make money. It's for me, it's to be happy. Like I love being my own boss. I love like I said earlier in the podcast, I love everything about the whole process that I get to do. You do have to be driven, but for me, it's just, I can't imagine ever going back to a normal job.
If it's something you like, you should be driven kind of by default. Yeah. You know what I mean? And if something you like doesn't make you driven, then I don't think you're probably cut out to be an entrepreneur or working for yourself. You know, I mean, I think there are some people who that's just not their kind of style and that's fine. But, you know, that is a big part of it. You know, if you can't like force yourself to stop playing Xbox and get to work, then, it might be hard to make a living doing stuff on your own. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of brings it to what my purpose is, well, my motto for my channel is sharing the joy of hand tools. And for me, the only reason to be in the shop is for the fun of it. And I remember there were times when I used to be making things and I'd come to a certain point and it was like, I really don't want to do this, but I have to do it. And so I'd force myself into it. And now when I come up against something that I don't want to do, I don't do it. I'll either find some other way to do it, some way that I want to do it, something I find interesting, like resawing. For goodness sakes, I really now absolutely enjoy resawing by hand.
Make it look pretty easy, but it's fun. With that huge saw,
I think that's one of the things that every time I use it, it surprises me how easy it is. I mean, I may have just finished a board and I know exactly how it's going to feel to do the next board, but the next time I put the saw into the wood, it's like, oh, this is so much easier than I expect.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed that little quick video that you posted of you resawing that thing, that huge saw. What's that saw called?
It's a frame saw. It's a knockoff of a design by Roubaud.
But it looks different than like your conventional frame saw.
Yeah, I put pistol grip handles on it as opposed to a ball and claw handles.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But yeah, I think that's my biggest thing about the woodworking shop is that if it isn't fun, don't do it. Find there are thousands of ways to do every single step of every single project you've ever been in, and if you can't find a way that's fun, then you're in the wrong world.
Yep. And that's why I like having a drum sander, because I don't like sanding. So if I can make that process a little shorter, I'm happy to do that. So yeah, I mean, and that's why I want to get better at using hand planes, because I know that if I was better at that, I could eliminate a lot of my sanding. So Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think James, your point of, you know, kind of sharing the joy, I think that's one of the big parts for me. And you know, it didn't really start off like that. I mean, I kind of started making stuff just out of necessity. Like when we moved into this house, we wanted some outdoor patio furniture, and I was like, I'm not spending $1,000 on patio furniture. So, you know, I built some myself using like a miter saw and a drill, and it still is lasting and works fine. And, you know, like it, you don't need, like, that's the thing. That's why I get so tired of those comments, is like, you don't need some crazy shop to be able to make stuff. Like, you just start slow, just like Zach said, and pick a project, start doing it, and if you like it, you're gonna get obsessed with it. I mean, that's the thing. It's one of those hobbies that it just eats at you. It's like it's like you cannot stop thinking about it. I think my wife is so sick of hearing about woodworking and making stuff, probably because now it's not only my hobby but is my job. So it's become just like, that's essentially my whole life. So it's kind of crazy. But going back to what you were talking about, James, I think a big part of what I've come to really love about this is to teach other people how to do this stuff, and to teach other people that, yeah, it's possible to make stuff yourself without, you know, formal training, or without having been doing this for 50 years or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of amazing. Like, I don't think I would have ever, even, you know, 3 years ago, thought, man, this stuff, it comes pretty naturally, you know, like you it's just step by step, you figure out things, you get better at certain things, and it's just amazing. So to be able to like kind of pass on that knowledge, and that knowledge that it's not that difficult, is one of the most cool things. I mean, I love it when I see people who've built like my projects, you know, like that is one of the most rewarding things. And I don't know, I love that I can pass this on. And, you know, being a teacher and making a living is kind of difficult in this day and age. So this is kind of a cool way to do that. You know, teachers don't get paid nearly as much as they should. So doing it this way is kind of a cool way to do it. So, yeah, it's that's probably become one of my biggest purposes. And then also just learning myself, you know, like I'm every single day, there's something new that I'm probably learning, you know, whether that's through watching other videos or just making stuff and figuring out, oh, if I do this way, it's a little faster, a little easier.
That aha moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
it's strange too, because you get, at least for me, like you get addicted to developing new skills.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like, and it's less intimidating, like, because you, the more you've like conquered, like the more you're like, well, I figured out how to do all of this stuff, so I can surely figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like an adrenaline junkie, but it's like a skill junkie. Like you turn into just, at least for me, I don't know.
Definitely. Sure. I mean, and I think, you know, we kind of talked about this last show, how to pick your project, you know, just pushing yourself that little bit extra. I mean, yeah, there's definitely some nerves there and some anxiety, but there's also just this sense of excitement, especially when you do it and you nail it, you know, like that is just, I mean, the pride that I think is probably the best thing about all of this making stuff there is very little I've done in my life that I have gotten as much like kind of pride out of, you know, when I can have this finished piece that just turned out exactly how I wanted, and it's just gorgeous, and other people think so too. It's kind of an amazing feeling. So, you know, that certainly gets me through the long sanding sessions very well. So, yeah, it's kind of an amazing feeling for sure.
I think that's one of the reasons why I don't take commissions.
Yeah.
Is I don't want my job to become woodworking.
Yeah.
I don't want my time in the shop to be what I'm paid for. And being a content producer forces me to spend a lot of my time at my computer. And I still have the moment when I get into the shop where it's still my sanctuary. It's still the place where I can have fun and separate. I mean, because there's absolutely nothing that replaces that Zen moment when you have that perfect song playing and your nose is in a dovetail and you're just doing that very tiny little detail work to make this fit. And just nothing else is happening in the world, but the music in your ear and the wood in front of you. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. definitely. It's and I think that's one of the other cool things is like being your own boss. You can like I can play whatever kind of music I want. You know, like I don't have to think about if somebody else is going to like this song or not because I like it. And
all the guilty pleasures come out because nobody else is listening.
Oh, y'all will be hearing all my weird music next this weekend. I just
I'll bring my playlist.
What? Yeah,
I'm trying to think of like what do you guys listen to? Give me a first man. Comes into your head.
I listen to a lot of hip hop for sure. I mean, I grew up in Atlanta, so that was kind of surrounded by a lot of that. But I listen to literally pretty much every single type of music. I don't think there's much that like old school country. I love like Sturgill Simpson, this newer country guy who's like, you know,
he is blowing up lately.
Oh, I know, it's crazy. He's amazing.
Like he just is like it's crazy. Like I hear everybody is talking about Sturgill Simpson lately.
Yeah, it's because he's amazing. I mean. You know, tons of rock. I mean, some metal. Although metal can either enhance my vibe or ruin my vibe in the shop. You know, it's a real kind of hit or miss kind of thing. Like if I'm doing something that is frustrating me and something's not going well, then metal can really be like can add to that aggravation. But if I'm like in my flow, you know, like I remember I was like putting together a bunch of drawers for a cabinet and like I was just, you know, running through them because, you know, when you're doing like 10 drawers, they're all pretty much the same. And
trust me, I know about drawers.
Yeah. So metal can be good for that. I mean, yeah, electronic. I mean, really, there's not much I don't listen to.
I listen to a lot of vocal bands like Pentatonix, Home Free, Straight No Chaser.
Mm, nice.
Nice. I don't know.
Also a lot of classical.
Yeah.
I could see that. I can see you doing
that. Definitely seems fitting. I love classical. But
I'm all over the map. I mean, like one of my favorites is Tom Waits is one of my favorites. But
Tom Waits is awesome.
I don't really listen to much metal, but kind of like the Swedish garage metal, I guess. It's not metal, but like Graveyard. It's kind of like 70s. 70s rock. It's it's awesome. Check out Graveyard.
70s, 80s.
It's like 70s bluesy rock.
Yeah, I've listened to Graveyard. They're good.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Arboretum is really good too. But anyway.
Yeah, music could be a whole episode. I mean, it's interesting how
We should do an off-topic episode like once in a blue moon.
That could be an extra show, you know, like the after show. We could do like our top 10 album playlist or something. That could be kind of cool.
What would be cool? I have an idea. If we had, we could plan out an off-topic show and people get to submit their questions for us. They don't have to have anything to do with building or woodworking. They don't have to. So it would pretty much just be a whole off-topic Q&A show. That would be kind of fun.
That sounds good to me. If you guys have any off-topic questions, let us know. That'd be
we're going to start putting them into some once we get enough we'll do a show that's just off-topic questions, funny or not, whatever.
That would be fun. Cool. That'd be cool. Well, you guys got anything else to add for the topic?
No, I don't.
Yeah. But.
I could talk about what makes it fun for hours, but you got to stop at some point.
I think you guys get our drift.
Jacob Hladek said we should do the "What is Zach eating?"
segment
this episode is a featured segment, and I thought for a minute, I'm like, you know what? This is the first time that I'm not eating anything, and I think this is the 23rd episode.
Yeah,
it's like seriously. The first time, but and then I realized like I am snacking on a bag of walnuts.
There you go. So Zach is eating walnuts.
So technically, I mean, this
how,
episode,
how on anyway. Topic though? I mean, you know, like walnut. I mean, of all the things you could be eating, that's like the only food that probably you know crosses over into our realm.
They are. I mean, it is. When's the last time you guys have eaten walnuts? They're
every
magical.
Day.
Well, really? Yeah, just yesterday, actually.
Every single day, I eat walnuts.
They're so good. It's just like buttery and supposedly it's good for you too.
Yeah,
it's guys, not what I eat, but
have you listened to Wood Talk recently with the new section with Shannon's
Lumber News
log update?
Yeah.
I love the new the song that they have at the beginning of that.
Yes, dude. They're really up in their production game lately, man. The Slabbergasted. That whole thing. It's been good. If you guys don't listen to Wood Talk already, any of our listeners obviously go, that they are like the OGs of woodworking podcasts. There's like 360 some 70 some episodes at this point. So yeah.
I feel like I should record a custom podcast song for us.
Well, what's annoying is like this Spreaker thing that we use for live streaming has like I have the ability to do like essentially a soundboard and like play, you know, voicemails or whatever, but you guys can't hear it. Like James and Zach cannot hear it. So I don't know. I got to figure out how to not have that happen. But anyway.
You could probably patch it into a like an auxiliary input. I don't know do you have a interface or are you just using your computer?
Yeah, my mic is just USB, so I don't need an interface. So I don't. It's weird, but anyway,
you can get one for like $50, and then
But this mic doesn't even do like regular non USB. So anyway. All right, so we got a couple questions from the live chat for our Q&A. So first from Evan Dunville, we've got he's asking, can you buy a cheapo spray gun and use his small compressor to spray finishes? What is the easiest to spray finish? So I would say probably not with a small compressor because you're probably not going to have enough reserve to be able to – I mean, you could spray for like 30 seconds and then wait 5 minutes for it to fill back up and do that over and over again. But what do you guys think?
But then you run close to overheating the compressor. Yeah. Most of those aren't designed for a continuous run.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a couple of things that I would see in that. One, what you guys mentioned is small compressor is going to have a hard time unless you're painting really small projects.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're finishing like a jewelry box, then yeah, you'd probably be fine. But anything bigger than that.
Two, the other issue is that most of the cheap spray guns that I've found, like the Harbor Freight ones, you have a really hard time finding something that has a tip. I mean, as far as the HVLPs, I think I don't think they go any lower than like 1.8.
Yeah.
I've seen like online that they have like 1.3 millimeter tips, but I've never actually seen them in the store. And I actually have a cheap set of Harbor Freight guns that I never use. I have a nice qual spray that I ordered, but that's what I use. But
when looking at a compressor, a lot of people look at the gallon size or the horsepower size, and those are good indicators, but the number you want to be looking at is actually the cubic feet per minute.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or the amount of air that it can actually push through the CFM there.
Yeah.
And that will tell you actually how much air it can sustain as opposed to, you know, how powerful, how fast can it fill up the tank or how much air can it hold?
Yep.
Yeah. And even HVLP, which is high velocity, low pressure, they still use a good amount of air. Now, they do have LVLP guns, which is low velocity, low pressure, which is less consumption. I can't remember the number.
Even with the HVLP, you still want to be up around, 4 to 4.5 CFMs.
Way more than that.
That would be like the bottom level if you were just spraying something small. But, you know, for continuous run, you're probably going to want to be like, what, six and a half.
I'd say I think even LVLP, you're talking at least 8 to 11 CFM for that. HVLP.
That's why I think if he has a smaller compressor, I think a turbine unit, an inexpensive turbine would probably be a better way to go. Because honestly, a compressor and a good gun is going to be way more expensive than like the Irlex HV5500, which is the system I've used up until now is like $300, and it's an awesome system. I mean, I had trouble spraying paint through it, but supposedly you can. But on everything else, like especially like general finishes, high performance, their water-based poly, that stuff sprays beautifully. I mean, you can get like a glass smooth finish with that. You know, granted, no dust nibs fall in your finish, but that's no fault of the spray gun. But yeah, it's that system works great. I think, Zach, you had a cheaper one from Rockler or Woodcraft, right? Was that a
turbine?
Yeah,
I had one of those. It actually worked. Yeah, it actually worked pretty well, and it was relatively inexpensive. I would highly advise that over Harbor Freight.
Yeah.
The issue is, I mean, it really depends on what you're trying to do. I mean, because you're going to be limited by tip size no matter what you do. Unless you order a nice gun, you're going to be limited by the size of tips. And, you know, and it depends on what you're spraying. Certain things want bigger tips. Certain things need smaller tips. You can thin stuff, but I really don't like doing that. If I have the right size to spray something without adding stuff to it, I just feel like that's the way to do it. Yeah. I mean, so the stuff is formulated to be sprayed a certain way. The more you try and, you know, make it work with a non-ideal setup, the more issues you're going to run into. So honestly, you can get a good, gun for $200.
Yeah.
I know that might sound like a lot of money, but if you're going to be doing it a lot, I mean, that's going to be one of the cheapest tools that you can
spend. You take care of it and it'll last you for a long time too.
And yeah.
Once you start spraying, it is incredible how much efficiency you will gain in that. Like if you're spraying water-based poly, that stuff will dry in no time. And the great thing about it, unlike like lacquer or something like that, the fumes are like next to non-existent. So it doesn't like stink up your shop to death. And, you know, I mean, you should wear a respirator, but it's so light on the fumes that you almost feel like you don't need to. I mean, it's kind of incredible. Like I've sprayed lacquer a couple times in the last couple of weeks, and I hadn't done it in a while, and I forgot like how just terrible the fumes are on that stuff. So yeah,
not to mention the time savings.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is amazing. Now there is definitely some cleanup, and there is definitely some setup and kind of tuning stuff in. But if you find a finish you like, then you know what needle you need. You know if you need to thin it. You know kind of what your, you know, your volume and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a worthwhile investment for sure. Especially, man, if you do furniture or tabletops or anything that's larger, it's very hard to do a tabletop and get it, you know, really smooth with even a wipe-on finish or something like that. Because, you know, once you get all the way across the surface, the other side might start to dry, and it's tricky for sure. So
the other nice thing with the water base is it's so easy to clean up.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, man. You know, soap and water, and you're done.
It's
boom.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
And guns aren't too hard to, I mean, if you stay on top of it, guns are actually pretty easy to clean. I mean, there's a few things you take apart. It's not... Don't be intimidated by what you think the cleaning process on a spray gun is. It's not that bad.
And you can leave the stuff in the gun between coats, which is amazing. Like, that's on water-based finish. Like, you load it up, go down, spray a coat, an hour later, come back, you know, hit down the dust nibs, wipe it down, spray another coat. Like, you never have to – there is no washing of a brush or getting another rag or whatever. I mean, it is so sweet.
And
I think the only complaint I've ever had about someone once they actually have it set up is just the only tendency of putting on too much too fast.
Yeah, definitely. And getting runs kind of stuff
if you guys are contemplating it and you're intimidated, I highly, highly recommend Jeff Jewett's book, The Complete Illustrated Guide to Finishing. That is I've read a lot of books that pertain to what I do, and that might be my number one most recommended book. We'll put a link to it in the show notes, I'm sure. But I mean, that goes through everything. It goes through not just spray stuff, but it's like the Bible on wood finishing. And he explains it very well, very simply. I think it comes with a DVD and a video. That's definitely one of my number one recommendations to anybody who's intimidated by the finishing process. I read that book, and I did some really wacky stuff that turned out really cool on some of my, like the slab table on the alder console table. I did some really weird stuff that I learned from that book, and it turned out awesome. So cool. Yeah, check that book out. It's really good.
Yeah, I have his book on spray finishing, which is great if you're looking specifically for spray finishing. And it comes with a little DVD, which is really helpful. So Cool. Yeah, I think the other question we're going to save for the after show. So live listeners, you'll get that for free. But anybody else on the feed, that's available on Patreon. So if you want to support us there, it's patreon.com/craftedpodcast. And it's a couple bucks, and you get an extra like 5-10 minutes of show, and you get to support us. So definitely check that out. So I guess let's move into the joke of the week.
Oh, yes.
Let me find the author before I read it, because I want to give him credit, because it was quite good. Hold on. Un momento. Apologize. Let's see. Well, I'll go ahead and read it. So, here's the joke. What do you call a piece of wood with nothing to do?
Board. Ah, I didn't even read it, I swear.
I thought that was lumber with holes.
Lumber
oh, that's
with
a good
holes.
One, too.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, so that was a good one. Man, I freaking lost the email that had the joke. Anyway, thank you to whoever submitted that. Mark Briggs. There we go. Mark Briggs. Thank you, Mark, for submitting that. That was a good one. So if you guys have a joke of the week, we have a contact form on our website, craftedpodcast.com, if you want to submit it there. Also, if you guys want to send us voice memos or whatever to play on the show, if you've got questions, that kind of thing, you can shoot us an email, record it on your phone using the voice memo app on, you know, whatever kind of phone you have, and you can email us. You can just do johnny@craftedworkshop.com, and we can play some real messages, which would be kind of fun. So I guess let's move into what we've been watching or whatever. What you guys got, James? I see you got something.
Yeah. Well, if you ever watch my movie, my videos, and listen very, very closely, sometimes you can almost hear the audiobooks I'm listening to in my headphones. Anytime I get close to the camera, I've had a few people ask me, what book were you listening to? So I've actually started adding that to some of my videos of what book I was listening to while making that.
Nice.
And I just finished a series where the first book is called The Three Body Problem. And I am into deep sciencey science fiction books. And this is one of the best I've ever come across. It's actually written by a Chinese author. And I just fell into this book. Absolutely phenomenal.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, man, I love audiobooks. I used to have a really long commute, and it was like an hour and a half plus in the car every day. And so I burned through audiobooks. I basically just sorted on Audible by the longest book and picked one that sounded interesting. The Bible, just fun fact, the Bible is the longest book on Audible. At least it was. It's like 120-something hours. And after that, it's like Atlas Shrugged.
It's read by Ben Stein.
No, it's actually really interesting.
In the beginning.
I listened to the sample. They've got all these different readers and, like, you know, sound effects and stuff. It's kind of cool, actually. But not that I'd want to listen to the Bible in its entirety. That would probably be a really long listen. Anyway, so, yeah, audiobooks are amazing.
Atlas Shrugged is a
So. Yeah, Atlas Shrugged is a good one, and a long listen, man. That was like 60-something hours, I think. So
long read.
Yeah, it was good, though. So what I've been watching, I have gotten super hooked on... So the new series is called Grand Tour, but it's the same three guys from Top Gear. And somehow I had never watched Top Gear, even though it was on for like 20-something seasons, so... Yeah, the Grand Tour is on Amazon Prime. It's like a Prime-funded, you know, series. And, the camera work is unbelievable. Like, the shots they get of these cars are just, I mean, it's just incredible. I'd love to see, like, a behind-the-scenes of what types of cameras and stuff they use. But then, you know, the ridiculousness of the three hosts and the kind of situations they get themselves into, and, you know, obviously all the sweet cars. So definitely Grand Tour, I think. If you have Amazon Prime already, it's free. So check that out.
Did you ever watch, I know I mentioned it in some of the earlier podcasts, Roadkill?
No, I have not. I need to check that
out. It is so addicting. It's so ridiculous because it's just... It's like one of my favorite series. I've purposely not been watching them for like 2 months so that I have enough to go back and binge watch.
Nice. Yeah, I need to check it out.
It's hilarious. It's these two guys that just find beater cars and just do like one of the first episodes, they find like this old piece of crap Jaguar and they just throw like a 671 supercharger on it. And so just take these old cars and just do crazy stuff to them and then like drive them across the country and they like fall apart and catch on fire. And it's ridiculous. It's awesome.
So are they all on YouTube? I'm just looking it up.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because there's so many people that like, I think, pirate them. So there's a playlist somewhere that shows them. Yeah. And there's also a Roadkill Garage, which is different. So you just want like the regular Roadkill episodes.
It looks like it's on like the Motor Trend channel, which.
Yeah. Motor Trend is who puts it on.
Cool.
Hopefully there's a good playlist somewhere that has them all in order.
This is like seems legit. So this is not pirated.
It's awesome. Like you will be hooked.
Yes, I will. I will certainly add that to my to watch because, yeah, that'll be good.
Even if you're kind of a car person, you don't even have to be like a car person. It's still really good.
Yeah. what you been watching this week, Zach?
So I haven't really been watching anything. I'm still binging on Parks and Rec. But
that counts. Oh, speaking of which, there's a piece of news. I don't know if you guys saw this new show. I guess the title is The Handmaid Project. It is Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler, you know, the two leads on Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And they have a new show on NBC. So the tagline is a celebration of talent in the crafting and handmaking movement. So it's a new TV series. I am applying, like, as we speak. There's a website where you can apply. It's got a ridiculous number of questions. It's literally like 100 questions long. But, man, it looks really like a cool concept. Obviously, Nick is a really talented woodworker. I don't know what Amy's background is in this kind of stuff, but those two are freaking hilarious together. So I actually have quasi high hopes for this, even though most reality making stuff is kind of cheesy. But
since you send me a link for that, I want to apply.
Heck yeah, man. I'll send you a dead link.
So that's what I've been watching, but I have actually been reading something that sort of pertains to what we do. A while ago, I ordered the Skills of a Blacksmith Volume 1 from Mark Asbury, who's a kind of a renowned blacksmith. And it's a really good book. Been thumbing through that and learning a lot of things that I'm doing wrong. It usually happens when I read books. But so now I can start doing things the correct way.
Nice. Cool. So,
but that's a good book.
Cool. Well, I guess tool of the week. I actually forgot. So, James, looks like you got one.
Yeah, as much as I rail against sanding and I try to do as little of it as possible, when there are certain times when you just have to use a sander or because you just can't find a file that fits that shape or a tool that works with it. And about a year ago, I made a bow sander, which is basically if you take a belt sander belt and rip it down so it's a 1-inch wide belt, and then you build a wooden frame that is bent inside that belt, it basically turns into a bow where the sanding belt runs around the bow as opposed to just across the beam. And it because it has this bow, it has, you know, 9-10 inches in between the two ends. You can get into all these curves and the belt naturally conforms to every one of the curves. And it is a fantastic little tool for that final finishing. And I use it all the time, especially when I'm working on handles and organic shapes. Just a fun little project.
That sounds cool. I need to...
really quick and easy to build, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I've seen those, but I don't have one. So, yeah, those little gadgets for sanding in nooks and crannies and weird curves and stuff are just so helpful, because trying to just handhold a piece of sandpaper just does not work that well.
I'll leave a link to it in the...
Yeah. So mine for the week is, I've used it a lot today, is this belt grinder. So there are a ton of companies who make them. Beaumont is one of the more popular ones. But the one I have is by a company called Fear, P-H-E-E-R. And it's an awesome grinder. In case you guys don't know, belt grinders are really popular in the kind of knife making world. And it's essentially just a 72 inch long, 2 inch wide sandpaper belt that spins around very quickly on a motor, and it has a hard, flat surface behind it called a platen or platen that allows you to kind of push up against, and also has usually a rest that you can kind of set to be square to that. And so essentially what I was using it for today was putting bevels on the ends of my pieces before welding to kind of create a, you know, channel for the weld bead to go into, and also then grinding the welds flat afterwards. So it's a really great tool, a lot more, I think, controllable than an angle grinder for a lot of that kind of stuff. And it's very easy to get a perfect 45 degree bevel or whatever bevel you want on the end of a piece you're about to weld. So it's pretty sweet. So I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Zach, how about you?
What were we talking about? I'm kidding. Mine is the my jigsaw. I have the 20 volt DeWalt jigsaw. It's cool. It cuts curvy stuff.
Yes. Although, have you ever had the problem? The base on mine will not seem to lock in. It wants to loosen up and like become not 90 degrees a lot of times.
Nope.
Man, I need to.
Yours is defective.
Yeah, it seems like it, actually. You can take a look at it when you're here.
I don't think I've ever moved mine off of 90 degrees.
I haven't either. So it's just due to vibration while cutting, it'll like literally shake itself, the little handle thing, loose. And
I abuse the living crap out of mine, and I haven't had a problem. Like, I've cut like 3/16 inch steel. I cut 3/16 inch steel on a regular basis with my jigsaw.
Wow.
And I haven't had an issue.
That's pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
Cool. Well, I think that will do it then for the show. So thanks to everybody for listening. Again, if you want to support the show, check us out on Patreon. It's patreon.com/craftedpodcast. And patrons, we will have the after show available to you. And live listeners, stick around and we'll dive into the after show in a second. Thanks, everybody.
See ya.